Welcome to Between Axles Podcast, your not-so-serious car podcast. My name is Peter, I'm your host, and today we're joined by four of my great co-hosts from Melbourne to Auckland for Episode 3, Buying and Owning European Cars, the Success and Failures and Everything in Between. We are also joined tonight by a good friend of ours, Alistair Sue, and his C43 AMG as our guest. Thank you for joining us. Jono and Paul joining from Melbourne.
Hey Peter.
And I think Paul's having a bit of technical issues. We'll jump back to him a little later.
Well, he'll be joining shortly. He's just playing the IT man right now.
Luan and Min.
G'day, how's it going?
Hello.
We have an excellent topic for you guys all today. We all have histories of European cars, whether it's a very cheap European or very expensive European. We'd love to share our own experiences, our skills, and our success and failures with our audience tonight. Alistair, would you like to introduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah, hey guys, I'm Alistair. It's an accountant. Always been into cars since high school, you know. Always been a JDM fanboy, you know, with your DC2 and DC5 and EK9s. Got into Euro after I started working, just wanting, you know, something more classy for the ladies. So, just going through my car histories. I started with a 2000 Toyota Celica during uni. Then once I started working, I got into a 2010 Audi A5 and with coupe. Then after that, I think 5 years ago, I sold that to get a 2013 BMW F80. That's a 320 diesel version. Super, super reliable car, no issues. Recently, I just traded that in for a 2019 Mercedes C43. That's a 3-liter V6 twin turbo version.
Just in regards to your C43, did you buy that new?
I bought it 1 year old. But I think the previous owner did a pretty good job of maintaining it. Like, I mean, all the stickers on the dashboards and on the sides, because it's still there. So I don't think he drove it much. I bought it at 9,000 Ks that he's put on. Yeah, got a pretty decent price. I mean, these kind of cars depreciate quite a bit during the first year, the moment you drive it. Super good buy, super happy with it. Sounds raw.
We had an opportunity the other night to actually hear Alice's C43, and it did sound incredible. Let's actually move on to a few of our co-hosts, and I want to start with Luan. He's our resident European specialist. Could you tell the audience what was your history with all your European cars?
So I actually started my European car journey by purchasing a VW Passat wagon. It was a V6 four motion. It was quite an early version of the car, so it was a 2003. And the reason why I purchased that was because back then I was going to the mountain, going snowboarding quite a bit with my friends, and I do mountain biking as well. So it was a bit of a snow wagon, and it was four-wheel drive, so it seemed like a pretty good car for that sort of adventure. And then I moved on to owning a Rolls-Royce Silver Shadow from 1974, so that's where my classic car ownership experience comes from. It was a little bit different. There's a whole bunch of stories that I can tell about that car. And then I sold my Volkswagen Passat and purchased a Mercedes C200 compressor wagon. That's the W204 chassis. And then after that, I kind of went a little bit crazy because I purchased quite a few cars with my friend with the goal of fixing up the cars and then selling them on again, hopefully for a bit of a profit. So we purchased a Mini Cooper, an Audi A3, and my 147 GTA, which I've still got. And then recently, just this year, I've purchased a Mercedes E55 AMG project car as well. So yeah, quite a few different brands and different types of European car, I have to say.
That's a lot of cars, and we're very excited to actually hear all your stories as well. But everyone else, I think, Jono, you had a bit of history with Europeans.
Yeah, quite a short history. I don't have the same number of cars as everyone else. I had a Volkswagen Polo as a first car. Yeah, that was nothing special, and I got rid of that pretty quickly. But when I moved to Melbourne, I was facing a dilemma because I didn't have a garage spot first moved over. So I had to find a car that was desirable to me, but not to a thief. So there wasn't really many that fit that build. I stumbled across the Volkswagen Up, and I thought it was really neat, cute kind of car. And I thought it would make a different kind of car to modify. You know, it's not not too common. So yeah, I picked up one of those for not too much, and I've used that ever since. So even after I managed to get a hold of a garage, had to find a place to store my car, I still decided to keep the Volkswagen Up just because it was such a good daily.
I think your Volkswagen Up is actually quite an interesting story as well, because it's not a very common car. The work that you've done to it is actually quite, you know, tasteful.
That's subjective, I guess.
But I think you did a good job. Owning European, we have a lot of history on it. What it's actually like to own European. So there's a lot of stigma and there's a lot of myth on the marketplace right now. Whether you're buying new or used, what are the common pitfalls that we all have to look out for, whichever European car we're looking at? So, Alistair, you told me that you had an Audi earlier, but you didn't have any issues.
So the Audi had a lot of issues, actually. I sold that pretty quickly within 1.5 years. But the BMW was the reliable one because I did a bit of research on that one.
Of course.
Yeah. I think the Audi A5 was a little bit of an impulse buy. Just pretty new at that time. I think I was 22 years old. I just didn't know much about cars back then. So I bought one that was pretty low case, to be honest. After driving for 1.5 years, started having issues. You know, the window wouldn't wind down. The taillights just keep shutting off. And when I go from gear 1 to gear 2, it just kept jerking and it just really uncomfortable to drive. It just wasn't smooth at all. So I got someone to look into it. They say just to look into it, you got to take the whole engine out and those kind of, you know, BS. So I just didn't want to deal with it. So I just sold it to another kid on TradeMe. He didn't even test drive the car, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Silly of him, actually, because he would have just found out about the gear shift issue. Or it might be a transmission, it might be a clutch, I'm not too sure. Would have cost thousands just to fix that. Yeah, sold that off pretty early on during its cycle. Then I've got a BMW diesel. I did a bit of research on this one, 320D F80. Super reliable. The gas is like insanely good for that car. Because I live out south as well, so mileage is pretty important for me. Yeah, just no issues at all on that Beamer. Just basic wear and tear, tires, light bulbs, brake pads. And I service it regularly at BM Workshop as well. So they really look after you and know their stuff. Yeah.
How much do you normally pay for a service for
BMW? For them, just a basic oil change and just thorough inspection is about 300 plus just. Not bad, actually, because they obviously know BMW cars inside out. Uh-huh. Doing full testing and everything. And anything that wants, they even pre-warn you about something that's going to break or something that you got to change in the future. So you kind of get that heads up on how much you're going to spend. When I sold that one, when I traded it, and I knew the transmission fluid was going to come up, that was hitting like 160Ks already. I know I've got to change it on.
160K for a BMW.
Yeah. And no issues, no issues so far. I bought that at 80 or 90Ks, 90,000Ks. I drive for like 25,000.
You got your money's worth.
Yeah, I got 25,000Ks a year because I live out south. I've got to drop business off and road trips and stuff. Super happy with it. Pretty sad to see you go, to be honest, but move on to faster and quicker things.
Alistair brings up some really good points. So you mentioned BM Workshop, and this is something that I really recommend European car owners actually do. You know, don't take your European car to just some random mechanic just down the road. You have to take your car to the right people because these cars are pretty complicated. So if you go to the right person or the right mechanic and they know exactly what they're doing, then it actually really helps you in the long run. Going to somewhere like oil changes, which is ironically where my parents usually take their cars, they don't usually check for the things that would commonly go wrong. Whereas if you go for a proper service and one of these specialists, independent specialists, they'll usually spot things a lot earlier and hopefully prevent some of those big bills from happening.
I think I did that mistake with my Audi. I just took it to my local mechanic. I'm pretty sure they used probably the wrong oil for that car.
Yeah.
Or not the suitable one, or just a low grade one. And that might have caused a little jerking issue, to be honest. I'm not too sure, you know, can't really point a finger at them.
I think the other thing I want to say as well is that a lot of people paint Europeans with the same brush and they say, you know, all European cars are unreliable or, you know, stay away from all European cars. But it actually really depends on which car you're talking about. Just even within the same manufacturer, there are different cars and they have different problems and different reliability. So European cars, it's a huge, you know, there's a huge variety of cars there. So my recommendation is, you know, to do the research like Alistair did with his BMW and make sure that you're buying a car that doesn't have a lot of common issues. Quite easy just to search up on Google and just look up for the car that you want to buy or the car that you're looking at. And there's plenty of information online. There's heaps of people who have owned these cars for a long time and have a lot of experience. So that's another really good tip as well.
Yeah, I think I spent hours just on YouTube, man. Ask my missus. She's like, stop watching car videos. And I mean, there's so many resources out there, especially YouTube. It's fun. You know, people like Doug Monroe and, you know, just name. I follow a couple guys that basically bought the same car or the same variant. And yeah, they show you step-by-step videos on how to take bumpers off. And for a super newbie like me, that was super helpful, man. You know, step-by-step how to change your oil yourself, you know, how to do basic maintenance stuff.
So did you do your own maintenance when you owned BMW?
I tried to. I tried to learn. I was like, oh, just to buy the tools and stuff. Like, cost me quite a bit. So I ended up just, I would love to learn it, to be honest, for my car right now. But I've got a couple free service for the C43. So I might just use that and then maybe one of you guys can show me the ropes.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, so you're going to do your own.
I don't know. Like, I'm risky. So I'll see.
It's not a car you want to start learning.
Yeah, I'll stick to account. I'll stick to accounting. I'll let the professionals do it.
Luan, you have a bit of history of fixing your own cars. Obviously, you have your own YouTube channel. On your experience, what is a good way to service your own car, especially service your own European cars? Alyssa just talked about owning the right tools.
Yes, it is really important to have the right tools for the job. So a lot of the time, it's really tempting for you to hack something together or to, you know, use the wrong tool and just kind of struggle away at doing something. But I definitely recommend that you get the right tool. So, for example, you know, your oil filter, usually it's got a specific socket. Sometimes it's an oil filter socket. Sometimes it's like a 27 millimeter or even larger standard socket that you have to use. And it could be just a $20 investment and that allows you to do your oil change. So just having some basic tools is really important. Go a little bit over the top with European cars because there's so many different types. Like I said, you could end up spending, you know, thousands of dollars on specific tools and, you know, even a scanner. But you can start small. If you're just doing an oil change, if you're just doing standard stuff in your driveway, then probably don't have to spend more than a couple of $100 just as a starting point. So it's not actually that bad.
And another thing to point out is, you know, if you buy the right tools, they'll last your lifetime. So it's just, you know, just a one-off investment, but it has a good return.
Yeah, exactly. And a normal service is about $300, right? So if you're spending $200-$300 on tools that will let you service your cars, that's a good investment.
Any recommendation? Do you have a set of tools that you would, or are you just dependent on a car?
You can get standard mechanics toolkits. So I managed to get one from Crescent Tools, which is a pretty reputable brand, and it's not too expensive. I actually bought mine secondhand on Facebook, and the guy had barely used it. And it was only $200 for a whole, you know, hundreds of pieces of toolkit specially made for working on cars. And I still use that toolkit as my, you know, standard toolkit. And then I just slowly added tools over time to that particular toolkit. You can get going for pretty cheap. I do recommend you get a really decent set of Torx and hex or Allen key bits that go on your ratchet, because that really helps when you are torquing things down, when you're taking things off. Unfortunately, with a lot of modern cars, Europeans and probably Japanese cars too, there's a lot of Allen heads and a lot of Torx bits as well, or Torx bolts as well. Another common one, especially for Mercedes, is the eTorx. So there's just a few different sets of tools that you should probably buy. But you can start off, you know, with tools from Supercheap and Ripco, and they only cost about $30 for a whole set of spanners or a whole set of eTorx. It's actually not that expensive.
To touch back onto the Audi that Alistair owned, if you remember, we talked about the transmission having possible issues. Now I'm thinking maybe Volkswagen had a lot of issues, or the group had a lot of issues with their transmission, because my history with European has mostly been Volkswagen and they've mostly been Golfs. I am familiar that the DSG, or the dual clutch transmission, had a few issues in the late 2000s. Is that a fairly common thing based across all Europeans as well, or just Volkswagen Group?
So I can talk a little bit about Volkswagens as well, because I have my VW Passat. And unfortunately, there's a lot of common issues that occur for every car within Volkswagen Audi. And I'm not saying you shouldn't buy Volkswagen Audi, but you should probably do the research online. So you can just type it up and look up the car model and look for common problems. And usually there's common issues. My experience is that, yes, a lot of European cars do have transmission issues. So my Audi A3 also had transmission issues, and that was one of the reasons why I had to sell it. Actually, didn't make any money on that one, unfortunately. and my Volkswagen Passat also had some started getting some transmission issues. Unfortunately, a lot of these transmissions are not really built to last, and a lot of people think that you don't need to service them because the dealer says that they're sealed for life, or you know, they don't need any servicing. But that's not the case, because there's a lot of moving parts in an automatic transmission, and people just neglect them.
Absolutely. So
that causes premature wear, and then you're left with a pretty big bill to fix the transmission, or sometimes even replace the whole transmission.
My last quotation on my previous call that had issues with about $4,000 for their early TSGs.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Ouch. Top tip, research on Volkswagen cars before you make any decisions. What about new cars? Have you guys had any experience with new European cars?
It's kind of hard to tell, unfortunately, Peter, because a lot of these things only happen after about 5 years. So you kind of have to wait a little bit before these issues start cropping up.
Yeah, that's true. See it in forums yet because it's too new.
Yeah. They designed the cars really well to run new, you know, to usually last beyond the warranty period, unfortunately. And, you know, we could probably talk a whole episode about planned obsolescence and how that affects the car industry. But that's what we found, especially with VW Audis, is that a lot of the, especially the more expensive cars, they tend to make them only last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, you know, maybe about 100,000 kilometers. There's quite a common issue with the V8s and the slightly older Audi S4, where the timing chain stretches and you need to change the timing chain and the guides. And that's an engine out job. That's one of the reasons why those cars are quite cheap now. So yeah, unfortunately, a lot of these things only come a little bit later on. We only find out a little bit later on. And it's probably not a fault of Volkswagen Audi, you know, because they're trying to make these cars perform really well and be really efficient. But a lot of the time, they're kind of pushing boundaries and making design decisions that affect you later on in your ownership experience.
Absolutely. And I think that's a very important point, because New Zealand has, I think New Zealand's very fortunate to have a wide presence of brands, especially European brands. So there's a lot of options and choices. So obviously you have your French cars, your German cars, British cars, and Italian. But there's some cars that even personally I would absolutely avoid, and not just from what I hear, but also from whether it's test driving or owning older cars. And personally, I would avoid a lot of British cars, and no offense to Luan, but I would personally avoid a lot of Italian cars. There's a perception and also lack of maintenance in the New Zealand car culture.
Yeah, I guess that's pretty fair. I mean, my British car ownership experience is pretty limited, but my Rolls Royce, probably because it was quite old and it's a Rolls Royce, it did require quite a bit of maintenance. What I noticed with British cars is that they usually kind of go to the parts bin and they cobble things together. So, for example, my Rolls Royce, the fuel pump was actually two mini fuel pumps fused together to make one, you know, high flow fuel pump or a slightly more powerful fuel pump. The transmission was a Chevy transmission. So it's a bit of a parts bin special, and that's what I found with a lot of British cars. I have to kind of disagree with you on the Italian car front, though, to be honest, because I think Italian cars are pretty fantastic. After I worked on my 147 GTA and did a minor restoration on it, it depends on who you buy it from, like you say, but a lot of them, if you buy them from like the Alpha Club or someone from the Alpha Club, a lot of them have been really well looked after. They're actually really good value for money as well, and you know, a whole bunch of fun.
I agree with the fun, and I think a lot of people who own Alfa Romeo testify that it is a fun car to drive. A lot of the new Alfa Romeo that I have worked for has got great reviews. Quadrifoglio, the Giulia, and Stelvio, they got raving reviews. I guess if you are into the market of buying an Italian car, definitely join that forum and make an effort to do a lot more research than your regular German or maybe French cars. But I guess it is rewarding for people who are wanting to get into the car scene or Italian car scene.
Yeah, I mean, the Italian cars, I think the good thing about them is that they design them so that you work on them, so that you can actually fix them yourself. So for my 147 GTA, I did most of the work in my own garage, and I was able to use, you know, just really simple basic tools. I got a lot of my parts from the UK because for some reason there's like a big Alfa Romeo following in the UK, and there's a whole bunch of online stores. So you can save yourself a whole bunch of money if you just order parts from overseas. And if you just learn a little bit more about your car, if you you know, join the Alpha Club and, you know, ask for a bit of help, I found that it was incredibly satisfying to work on that car because it was just a little bit more challenging than, say, like a 90s Japanese car, but it wasn't super challenging that I couldn't do it in my own garage. So it was a nice balance of, you know, Italianness and also being able to fix that Italianness.
What about parts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably not a good example because my GTA, there's only 5,000 of those in the whole world. So there are some parts that are GTA specific that are really, really difficult to find, things that you would never expect. Like someone's had to 3D print indicator lenses and washer bumper covers. You know, just little parts like that they don't make anymore. And everything else I've been able to source pretty cheaply just from overseas. You just got to be really wary of those sort of things. You know, just be patient. Don't panic. Do your research, you know, before you do anything.
Going back to Alistair's current car, when you were buying a C43, did you look at any other European cars?
Yeah, I was never a Mercedes fan, to be honest. I kind of got jumped into the Beamer buzz. So I was actually looking at F80 M3 or an M4 just because they're a little bit more fun. Knowing myself, I knew it's going to be a bad financial decision. I know I'm going to sink a lot of money into it. It's just going to be a rabbit hole and, you know, sure. One part leads to another. And then next you know, you're going to sink like 20, 30 Gs into this little weekend car. So I kind of pulled the trigger. I went into Mercedes just to have a look at a new range because I heard the interior is pretty nice. Saw a few photos and some reviews on YouTube. So I wanted to check out the CLA 45. They didn't have one at the showroom, but the guy said, hey, are you looking for a car? You know, typical sales technique is we've got a C43 that might suit you. And why don't you just take it home for a drive? I was like, oh, cool. So I actually drove it home for a day. Mrs. White, whose car is that? She knew I wanted to buy a new car. We actually test drove a couple M3s just within that month ago. So she didn't really like it. I mean, the interior is pretty bland, like, and it's pretty fairly common across Beamers. But I mean, she didn't like the bumpy ride as well. So
yeah
suspension was quite stiff. I mean, we drive a long distance, like 20, 30 Ks a day. So we wanted something pretty comfy as a daily. So yeah, we took the C43 back. Yeah, boosted it on the motorway with my mate straight after. Man, I just couldn't let it go. I mean, the V6 engine is powerful, man. And it's four-wheel drive, safer for her to drive too. Oh, one major issue that the C43 had, major crabbing issues, like tire skipping. Because it's a four-wheel drive. When you do a full lock on the steering wheel, either left or right, especially during a wet road, it skips like a crab.
Is that dangerous? Sounds like a safety issue.
I went through a lot of forums and even talked to a few of our car mates. Right. So it's pretty common across four-wheel drive because I think the tire wall is too short at the front. And because they wanted bigger rims, it's just a sacrifice they had to do. So a lot of people on the forum just say, just don't do a full lock.
If you had to buy another European, would you stick with Mercedes?
Yeah, I'd probably stick with them. I mean, their tech is pretty up there. And the interior really get you a... I'm not a super major fan of their new designs, to be honest. Especially with their CLAs.
Oh my gosh, yeah, the new BMW designs.
Yeah, the BMW is worse. Especially the M3. Let's not go. There's probably another whole podcast on that, eh? Yeah, I reckon the F80 is probably the nicer one.
How about Luan? Would you, if you had the opportunity to buy a new, would you stick with the brands you know, or would you be a bit more adventurous?
Honestly, I probably wouldn't buy a new Alpha because I feel like owning my 147 GTA, it's the fixing and the maintenance and sort of the improvement to it is part of the whole experience.
Hey, Jono, we haven't heard from you in a while. Would you buy a new V-Dub or sorry, maybe even another V-Dub to replace your up one day?
Probably not. I probably wouldn't buy a new anything though, to be fair. I mean, I only bought the Volkswagen due to the circumstance. I probably don't have that much interest in them outside of that. Sure. That's sort of one of the big draw cards of that car was it was really well designed in that sense. It was very utilitarian and very practical in the way they designed it. And I don't know if I could say the same about, you know, other European cars or other Volkswagens, but I definitely probably will avoid Euro cars in the future. For the Volkswagen, I'll make an exception.
How about you, man?
Personally, I probably wouldn't. just because there are other Japanese cars that I would like to own.
Sure.
Never say never.
Yeah, never say never. You never know.
Peter, I just want to say something as well. So we've got over some of the like negative things about owning European cars. There's a lot of positive things as well. So one of the reasons why I bought my VW Passat just to start my European ownership is because I found that it was a much safer car. It was a lot more powerful than any of the competitors from Japan. You know, it ticked a lot of those boxes for me. A lot of things are a compromise, right? You can't get everything all at the same time. You can't get everything that you want. If you want something that's fast, that's reliable, you know, that's cheap, you know, it's probably not going to happen. But I think for a lot of European cars, usually the focus is on safety, focuses on looks, on comfort, and also on performance. So you can get a lot of ridiculously fast European cars. So it kind of depends on your priorities and what you want out of your car. A lot of the time, if you do the research and you know exactly what you want, then I think you're going to have a good experience. So it's not all negatives. I think there's a lot of positives in owning European cars as well.
Every time we people think about European, it's always the failures and the painful for your wallet discussion. But you're right, because one of our close friends, he recently had a baby. He had an Atenza, a Mazda before, until he crashed it. And he replaced it with a 2014 A4 station wagon, just a stock standard. And he loves that thing. He said it's comfortable, it's quiet, it looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Absolutely, good point there. They make great looking cars.
Yeah, I reckon the safety rating is massive for even for myself, to be honest, when I made the decision to change.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen a head-on-head car crash between a Japanese car and a European car?
Yeah, I've seen photos.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you look at those Suzuki Swift, they're like absolutely smash.
I actually...
I lied, actually.
I owned a Mini for a while.
Which Mini?
It was just a Mini Cooper. I was looking at buying a car just to run around and ride, and I was kind of tossing up between the Swift Sports or the Mini Cooper Supercharge. And at that time, they're both around, and they're still out. Probably you can pick one up for around $6,000. But really, just test driving the two cars, the Mini did come out on top in regards to like handling, also just torque as well. So definitely value for money, the Mini Cooper Supercharge.
Asian ladies love it, eh? Scucks.
Yeah, so, and I guess that's one reason why I don't own it anymore. So the ex ended up actually really liking the car, so I just gave it to her.
It's a nice parting gift. Here, have a blow-on Mini Cooper.
I think if you're going to buy a Mini Cooper, especially that first generation supercharged Mini Cooper S, get the manual. Don't get the automatic, because they came in a CVT, as far as I'm aware, so try and avoid that.
Yeah, definitely. So this was a manual, and I gotta say, it was actually real fun, and handling wise is wow. It was actually pretty on point, eh?
They're really good cars, definitely. I have to say, I think they're generally pretty reliable. I think we just got a bit of a lemon, unfortunately, and it had too many issues all at the same time.
Yeah, I definitely like the older European cars, like the old Mini Cooper, or even like
Beatles
like,
and stuff.
Yeah, the Beatles, or the BMW, the E30s.
Beatles? Yeah, not the Beatle, Jono. Please rinse your mouth out. Not the Beatle.
Yeah. What's wrong with the Beatle? The old Beatle, man.
I've been fortunate enough to drive a Lamborghini Huracan in Dubai when I was there. I had it for 24 hours. Yeah. So 24 hours, so it was more like 12 hours, because I was dead tired from a week partying around the Mediterranean prior to that. My memory's a little hazy. There's a YouTube video of me driving it around. It's actually, this was a 2017 Lamborghini Huracan V10. And we rented it out for about $800 Australian. And because I was sharing the rental fee with my flatmate who was with me on the trip, it was only $400 for 24 hours.
That's not bad.
It's a steal. But the best part is, though, because we're in Dubai, petrol there is super cheap. Like, it's legitimately cheaper than buying water. A bottle of water in Dubai costs you about $5 Australian for a 600ml bottle. I think a liter of petrol, 120 RON, whatever silly number it is, it would cost you 65 cents Australian per liter. It is insane. So we filled up the Lamborghini, drove out to a place called Jebel Al Jais, which is a freshly newly laid tar steel road that borders the countries UAE and Oman. And that is It is as smooth as a baby's butt, and there's literally no one there. The closest thing we saw to life was a few mountain goats. But aside from that, it was just us at a windy piece of road and a V10 strapped to the back of this just crazy car. There's no other experience like it. It corners super hard because it's four-wheel drive. The V10 is naturally aspirated, so there's just instant fault response. But it also handles, it also drives around the city like a Toyota Camry. You could three-point turn it. You can't take anything inside. You can't put your shopping into it because there's literally no room between you and the front seat and the boot. One of those things that you got to tick off your bucket list. Just drive a supercar and just give it hell. You won't regret it, honestly.
Yeah, at least do some hot laps around Hampton Downs one day.
I'd much prefer to just drive a European car for a day, a really cool European car for a day, than to have it locked up in my garage. Okay. I had to actually pour oil into the Lamborghini. The oil light came out. The oil light came on halfway through as I was driving up the Jebel. I didn't know what to do. I was just like, oh, does that mean I should put oil in the car? It seems odd because it's a rental car, so you'd think that they'd have oil topped up in it. But called the guy, and he was just like, yeah, no, that's good. The light will go off at, you know, in 10 minutes or so. Just keep driving it. Me being me, having experienced cars, like, you know, worked on cars before, I was like, this doesn't look right. So I pulled over. This is the UAE, so it was like 50 degrees outside, and this car's not designed for that sort of environment. Now, the interesting thing with the bonnet is that before I pour the oil in, they won't actually let you open the bonnet unless the engine temperature drops to a certain temperature. So we had to wait for the engine to cool down, but because it was so hot, it just took an insane amount of time to cool down. We eventually found that there was an override that you could pull on the back seat of the, well, not the back seat, but like the back compartment on in the car. It was a crazy trip.
I think that's actually a very good way to end in a high, because that's a great story. Any last words from our guest, Alistair, today?
No, I had awesome fun just sharing my experience with everyone. I definitely learned a lot of stuff from you guys as well, from the pros. And yeah, looking forward to the next one.
And any last words from Luan, Jono, and Min?
Buy a Honda.
Don't buy a Honda.
That's okay.
Definitely buy a Honda. Don't buy a Mini Cooper for your ex-girlfriend.
That's it.
I have to say, if you are interested in European cars, don't be afraid, because there's a lot of information out there, and there's people like me who will help you out and give you a good hand. So if you like European cars, go for it. You know, they're slightly more complicated than Japanese cars, but yeah, they're just cars at the end of the day as well.
And if it breaks, just go to Luan.
Yeah, Louis Garage.
With that note, we're going to end the night tonight. Appreciate everyone joining today, our co-host, and thank you so much for our guest, Alistair, for sharing his experience with European cars. But our podcast number 4 is Nissan Brand Talk. So that's coming up in a couple of days' time. So if you are looking to either buy a new or used Nissan, or looking for a project Nissan car, stay tuned. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for joining. Good night.